You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, brought to you by Ministry Grid. Ministry Grid is an online church leadership and volunteer training platform offering a library of thousands of videos and a suite of powerful admin tools to provide practical training for every area of ministry in your church. Find out more and get a free 30-day trial at ministrygrid.com/howitworks. Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper. I am here with Todd Adkins, who is the Director of Leadership at Lifeway Christian Resources. Today, we're going to ask 5 leadership questions about leading worship with Stephen Miller. Stephen leads worship at Real Life Church in Austin, Texas. Before that, he was at The Journey in St. Louis. He's the author of an awesome book that I had the chance to work with him on at Moody Publishers called Worship Leaders, We're Not Rock Stars. He has a bunch of worship albums out, of which I have lost count, and I will let him now brag on himself and his family and whatever else that he does.
1, 2, 3, go.
Started leading worship about 16 years ago and started writing music pretty quickly after that, just as an outlet for how to express what was kind of happening in my heart and within our local church. And so I have 5 albums that I claim, and then 2 that I won't, and a handful of EPs outside of that. So,
People can find all the ones that he claims at stephen-miller.com.
The rest are available on google.com.
Yeah. Or, some of them are on iTunes, some of them are, you go on like, any of the music streaming things, and they're all on there, but they're also intermingled. There's like 88 Stephen
Millers.
Those
are the ones when
the
you
world.
Wore a lot of eyeliner, right?
Yeah. There's one that's like a weird, like new age album called Cancer. And then there's one where this guy is like a country album and this guy doesn't have a shirt on and he's just like looking all
ripped. Is it you?
Ripped. No, it's not me. I mean,
you said looking all ripped. So I thought maybe. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we jump into the 5 questions and we will see where this conversation goes. So first up, just because worship is a massive, it's an industry, really. But it's also something dear to the heart of church. And so those are sort of, it's a strange juxtaposition. So I want to kind of start off by trying to tee you up to help us understand what is the difference between worship leading and music leading?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone who has a gift set as a musician can lead songs, right? But there is a difference between leading songs and leading worship. When you're leading worship, you're leading people. You know, you're really seeking to connect people to the truth of the gospel and do that in the most effective way you can through song, but not just limited to song only. As a worship leader, you're also supposed to be committed to being a theologian, to being a storyteller, or what I call a liturgist, which is sort of a dirty word to some people, but essentially just saying, I want to tell the story of the gospel in the most helpful way I possibly can and not leave parts out. And so I'm going to shape the order of our worship in a certain way with songs and scripture and prayer and exhortation and things like that, and becoming a student of how to do that in the best way you possibly can.
What does all that look like outside of a church service? So, like, I mean, because people think worship leader, they think up front, I mean, you are leading the musical portion of worship. You're sort of setting the tone for the corporate worship gathering. But what do you do Monday through Saturday?
Some of us think golf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I would say, before you're a worship leader, you're a worshiper. That should be your primary identity is coming as someone who's just enthralled with the glory of God, and you're passionately pursuing the presence of God Monday through Saturday. I mean, there's what, 1 hour a week, 2 hours a week that most people are actually in corporate worship. That doesn't consist, like, the Christian life is not wrapped up in that 1 or 2 hours. There's a whole nother week's worth of time, and worship can't be just confined to singing.
Right.
It's all of our life, And so as a worship leader, I'm committed to pursuing God in private and really becoming a student of his word, becoming a student of who he is and what he's done, becoming a student of how to convey that to my people and really shepherd them. And I think that's the difference. I would say being a shepherd versus a hired hand is also in that, you know?
I think one of the interesting things is if you go back a decade or two, you know, you would hear the music minister.
Absolutely.
Instead of the worship leader. And of course, church practices changed. And even, you know, it used to be that you would find a music minister at a larger church. And definitely there was, you knew what they were doing. They were leading a kids choir, a student choir, an adult choir. They were doing all different kinds of things throughout the week.
Lots of special music involved there too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Cantatas. Mm-hmm.
I know what a cantata is.
It's not a Greek yogurt.
I've spent enough time in church.
but you know, how do you think that has shifted and changed? And what does that mean for, I mean, you kind of answered this question already, but maybe expounds a little bit on what does that mean throughout the week? Like, how does someone be a worship leader in this day and age and say, okay, I can justify, you know, being full-time on a church staff?
Sure. I mean, I think most churches are starting to see that it's very difficult to justify that. My church being one of them, you know, at Real Life, I'm not a full-time worship pastor. I'm a part-time guy who, you know, spends my time employed by the church, planning our services, working with our musicians, and things like that. But then outside of that, I'm sort of just wherever the Lord opens up an opportunity for me to pour into young worship leaders, coach guys, equip guys, write books to help do that as a resource for young worship leaders to grow in their craft, to grow in their passion for Jesus and all of that. And so, but even my own church, we're not seeing that as a real need to have a full-time worship guy.
Are you seeing a blend of the position? Like, I know that we used to have like a guy who was worship in small groups for campus, as an example.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty common to see a guy who is the worship leader and the student minister or
creative, you know, arts.
Creative art. Yeah.
So, they kind of put all things creative under one banner.
Oh, you're a graphic designer.
Which sometimes works, you know, sometimes works and sometimes is a miserable failure of checking out what a guy's actual skill set and gifting is. And that's why church graphics tend to stink at a lot of churches, you know?
Church graphics would be another one. It's often hard to justify a full-time position for. So they just sort of combine two part-time positions and usually the person is passionate and gifted in one area and maybe competent in the other.
Yeah. I think a lot of the guys and really the best worship leaders that I know are not just leading worship in their church, but they're also pastor shepherds in their church who are, you know, caring for people and counseling people and even maybe sharing some of the preaching load. And like a guy like Matt Boswell or Mike Cosper would be guys that kind of come to mind on that, you know, or a guy like Michael Bleeker, who just has this massive volunteer base that's sort of his group of people that he's
sort of shepherd
trying
that,
to shepherd that like group of people within his. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned being more than just a worship leader. That transitions pretty well to the second question, which is how can a worship leader best work with a preaching pastor or a lead pastor or a senior pastor, whatever that position looks like in a given church? So the worship pastor has a crucial role in corporate worship, but is often kind of off to the side because the lead pastor's, you know, sermon series is chosen by them and that kind of thing. So what is a healthy relationship, working relationship between those two positions look like?
Well, I think it has to start with humility. I mean, above all things, like you have to recognize what your role is in the church and that you are the worship leader or even maybe the worship pastor and that you're a pastoral person. But in the end, the lead pastor is the worship pastor of the church. Like he's accountable before God on how he shepherded his church and even in the area of worship. And so start with humility, recognizing that God has put you in a position to serve your lead pastor and to come alongside him and to help him with the vision of where God wants to take the church and things like that. The other is just to start by asking, how can you come alongside where he's going, whether that be topically, scripturally, whatever that might look like, and then to try as best as you can, in a sense, to exegete the text through song, you know? Mm-hmm. And so if we're going through a series on generosity or, you know, finance or whatever, let's just say, as a worship leader, I can come and say, okay, pastor, what scriptures are you going to be preaching from today? And do you have any song suggestions or even songs that you really want me to do today? And then from there, you kind of can kind of build out, we want to do songs about the generosity of God and about...
And that fits with what you're talking about being the liturgist, where you're telling the story of the message, the text from opening song to concluding number, benediction, whatever's at the very end of the service.
It's like one big idea, you know?
And you can tell when that happens. And honestly, in many instances, it's the pastor at fault for the planning, simply because he changes something last minute. I mean, yes, we want to leave room for the Spirit, but if the man is spending a great amount of time in study for that week and switches it up at the last minute, almost every Sunday, you can tell. I mean, you can tell when those two things are completely separate. When
worship leaders love it though, when the pastor gets up there at the end and he just goes, "Man, I really feel like we should close with this song. Why doesn't the band come back up here? Why doesn't the band come back up here and we'll finish up with this song?" And you're scrambling for chord sheets and somebody's, I think we did that one a month ago somewhere.
Well, I will say, I mean, that's why I said it starts with humility. It starts with servant-hearted humility, because in the end, I can either get angry about that shift or even the pastor's gone long and now I have to cut two songs, you know, at the end or whatever, or, you know, he's gone long the last two services. So we're going to do, it's just so much, you have to be so fluid and not really stuck to your way, because either you're going to be really, really frustrated or mad, or you can say, okay, Lord, I trust that you're leading my pastor.
Well, that I guess leads to our third question in, thinking about humility, thinking about that it's bigger than you and it's bigger than the pastor. How does a worship leader keep from becoming showy or almost worship that you watch? Mm-hmm. How do you avoid worship that you watch?
Yeah, man. I mean, that's such a subjective thing, you know, from church to church. It's just so different. And so I would say to start, we have really great tools that we can use as churches in the 21st century to tell the story, to visually and audibly depict the glory of God, whether that's sound and lighting or song choice or band instrumentation or whatever. So like when you look at the scriptures in Revelation and you see the throne of God, you very rare, I mean, I just can't find anywhere in the scriptures where that's a subdued, boring, quiet experience, right? It's loud. It talks about like mighty rushing wind and crashing waves and things like that. And so it's loud.
It's written like sensory overload.
Yeah. And even John the Revelator is like trying to describe what he's seeing, and there's rainbows crashes of lightning. And it's just, he can't even put words to describe what he's actually seeing, right? Yeah. He's just trying to his best to liken it to something that he has seen in this world. And so I would say, a lot of people would say, if they were actually seeing that nowadays in our cynical minds, we might say, man, that was just so showy, you know?
Yeah.
But the truth is, the glory of God is just this vibrant, amazing, you know, mysterious glory and beauty and majesty.
And you said at the beginning of answering this question that it's subjective. And the more you talk, the more that sort of sinks in, simply because I've seen musicians stand up in front of people and rip off a guitar solo or do something beautiful on the piano or sing a solo or whatever it is. And you can do the exact same song in the exact same place, and one musician looks like it's a concert and the other musician looks like they are leading worship.
Yeah.
And the congregation can sense the difference. And I think it's simply a matter of the heart and the tone of the one doing it.
Yeah.
Are they doing it for... Mm-hmm. For worship, or are they doing it for worship of self?
Yeah. And you can, I mean, and the constant tension is to ask the question, like, what's the purpose of this? And at what point do we cease from actually displaying the glory of God? And then we move into this land of distracting from the glory of God. Yeah. Because it's a very fine line, and obviously every person has a different take on that. But yeah, I mean, there is a sense that, like we were talking about earlier, what do worship leaders do during the week? Well, they better be worshiping. And the sad fact is that many of them, the only time they worship in a given week is that they're on the stage on Sunday morning, and that's when they worship best. So that's when they worship, you know? And Jesus really warned us against that quite a bit. When he said, beware of practicing your righteousness before men to be seen by men.
In connection with Barnum's question, I think one of the things that that could be really helpful is if you would tell us, if I'm a senior pastor, a lot of senior pastors will be listening to this podcast. If I'm a senior pastor and my worship leader is talking too much, or my worship leader is maybe doing a couple of those solos, or it looks like he's trying to draw more attention to himself than to Christ, how does one address that? What's the best way to address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this goes back to the first question of what's the difference between a music leader and a worship leader. I think part of being a worship leader is constantly seeking to improve my craft. And part of my craft is don't jabber on, you know, and let your thoughts be meandering. And most worship leaders, when they open their mouths to talk, that's exactly, you just walk away not knowing what the worship leader just said, you know?
That was a lot of words, not a lot of messages.
Yeah, yeah. And so I would say a pastor, you know, he should be doing this not just with the worship leader, but with whoever's giving the announcements or whoever is, you know, doing anything, any kind of speaking in the church. It's the pastor's job to ensure that he's developing whoever is talking. And so as a pastor, and even as a man who I'm passionate about equipping other worship leaders. So I go to those worship leaders. If I'm going to have them say something in the service or read a scripture or exhort someone or even pray, I have them write it out first. And I mean, that's what the pastor's doing. You know, he's going to write out his sermon and then practice it and then, you know, and get it down, you know, to where it sounds natural and it actually is saying something in a clear, concise way. And so that's whenever I'm coaching worship leaders and to be worship leaders, that's what I'm having them do. I'm training them on picking the right words and cutting the rest out. And I think pastors would do well to do that with their worship leaders. And like I said, not even just their worship leaders, but their announcements.
I think that's, I'll go ahead, Don.
Okay. This is obviously a leadership podcast. And one of the greatest things I think that we can do as leaders, if we're looking to develop ourselves or develop others, is to open ourselves up to that clear, consistent feedback
Absolutely.
From a few trusted people. And so the pastor needs to do the same thing. If he wants to grow, he needs that feedback. He needs to, if he has a Saturday night service, he needs to get everybody around on Saturday night and be like, okay, what went well? What didn't go well? What connected? What didn't connect? Should I, you know, use different words here or there? And so I think the same thing, you know, for a worship leader, you know, it's do you have that debrief on Monday morning, or if you have the luxury of having a Saturday night service, debrief then.
Yeah. And if a worship leader is seeing that modeled in their lead pastor, they're going to be more that, I would say. They're seeing the humility come from the top down.
I don't care what you do. You greatly limit your ability to grow if you do not have people speaking into your life.
Absolutely.
You're never going to have the transformation of development that you want to have or that God wants you to have unless you invite that in. Into your life.
Yeah.
I think all of that is a pursuit of excellence. I think churches, I do think this is changing, but for a long time my impression has been that oftentimes the excellence in churches or the pursuit of excellence kind of falls by the wayside because it's about the message and it's about the mission. And so as long as we're doing God's work, the quality with which we do it is of less substance. We see the same thing in Christian businesses. We don't need to be excellent. We're just doing God's work, which is, you say that out loud and it sounds asinine. And so that whole idea of feedback and learning and humility and saying, what can I get 3% better at next time? Well, how can I be more clear is no different than the pursuit of excellence in a sales presentation, except that what's riding on it is gospel presentation. And that's so much more significant.
Yeah. So last night I was flying here to Nashville and I look out over in my window and there's just this breathtaking sunset. And I just sat there and I couldn't help but worship in my seat. And the reason is that God created that with excellence, you know,
and it was kind of showy too.
It was a little bit showy. Yeah. But I mean, he does that with everything. Like that's the reason I love to go skiing, or I love to go to the beach, or I love to do whatever, is because I get to gaze upon the excellence of God in visual form. And so if I, as a believer in general, whether I'm in ministry or in the workplace, don't embrace excellence as a standard for my life, I'm not speaking well of the excellent creator. You know, and there is something, I mean, I think there is a bit of a flawed view of worship music, that if it's truly excellent, that it's not as raw or real, or, and I just would totally wholeheartedly disagree with that.
One, from a congregant's perspective, we'll jump into the fourth question here in a second, but from a congregant's perspective, excellence by the leadership makes worshiping in a seat or in a pew so much easier, because there are fewer distractions, and it is a streamlined message between what you are trying to communicate and what I am receiving without, I mean, if a guy keeps screwing up on his instrument, it's distracting.
It's very hard to focus.
If you talk nonsense, it's distracting. If you use the same verbal crutches repeatedly, it's distracting. All of that stands between a congregant who's bringing their own crap to the service, stands between them and actually worshiping. So excellence really matters.
Yeah. There's enough, we have enough hindrance with our flesh in coming into a worship service where there's so much already in the spiritual realm fighting against us, engaging with the truth of Scripture, the power of the Holy Spirit to convict us of our sin and convince us of the truth, that in encountering the person of Jesus Christ. I mean, there's just already so much working against us that as leaders, we should be fighting to pull as much of that distraction away rather than add to it.
Earlier, we asked about the relationship between worship pastor and preaching or lead pastor. Fourth question just kind of expands that out. And we have touched on some of this, but so let's make this a practical kind of question in terms of how does the worship leader work with an entire church staff? So you are part of a team, but you're doing a unique kind of job that exists primarily for Sundays or for a worship experience, whereas a lot of the other pastors are doing work that exists primarily for Monday through Saturday, for small groups, for missions, for, you know, whatever it is they're doing. So how do you blend your worship leading with the greater staff team?
That's a really challenging question because the nature of worship ministry is so different, and I say worship music ministry in particular, is so different and is so niche, you know, that it can be easy, and I think it's sort of easy for every ministry to sort of silo itself out.
Absolutely.
Because it's easier to get stuff done when you're not working together as a team. But in a lot of churches, the worship offices are even on a completely opposite end of the building. You know, you don't even see each other.
You stick the youth guy in a shed and the worship guy off kind of somewhere in a sound closet and everybody else gets the office.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, right now, like I don't have an office. That makes things challenging, but we do have a weekly staff meeting. I think that's a really great way to connect, to hear how we can be praying for one another and what's going on in each other's ministries, and just get a heartbeat on the life of the church. Praying for our church together, I think, is huge. We do that every week, and that's really strong. And then just to sort of, you know, I think a strong, like, ministry planning season is really helpful as well. That's something we started doing at The Journey a couple years before I left, is that every year around this time, we would submit to the elders of our church sort of our plan for the ministry, our ministry over the next year.
Right.
And they, as elders, have just had the opportunity to hear from every ministry. And so then we get to start working together on how these all interface, because I might have something in my ministry plan that youth
the elders to sort of see connections that you might have otherwise missed.
Absolutely.
Because you're focused singularly, but they can see all this working at the same time.
Yeah. And I think that's a great, I mean, that's a really great use of eldership too, in that I do best when I'm able to focus on the worship ministry and I'm not having to worry about how do I reach, you know, five-year-olds with the gospel, you know, like that should be on my radar. I'm a parent, I've got five kids. And so I'm passionate about that, but I'm not like I'm focused on that's leading.
Not your, it's not your primary vocation.
Right. Exactly. So let people lead with excellence where they're excellent, and then allow the governing body of the church to really oversee how it interconnects.
Have you seen any churches that do a good job? And Todd, this having been on church staffs, you might have some examples too, that look at pastors of different ministries or ministers, whatever they're called in that context, and say, you are our worship leader, but you clearly have a shepherding instinct. You're a good counselor, or you have a real evangelistic bent. And kind of move people into places where they're supporting other ministries, they're involved in other ministries. Have you seen churches that do that well, kind of unsiloing and saying, hey, you really ought to be looking at doing this as well. So that's your primary thing, but you should be involved in outreach. You should be involved in counseling. You should be involved in student ministry, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, at the Journey, I think Darren, our pastor, Darren Patrick, did a really great job of calling that out in me, because I kind of came on to the church staff at the Journey as more of an artist in residence, and I would lead on the weekends, and that was pretty much the extent of my work responsibility, because I brought my whole band with me, and so there wasn't a lot of training, you know, or shepherding outside of that. And then he was just like, man, I really feel like you are a great teacher. I really feel like you're really good at equipping worship leaders. Let's move you into position that helps you to do that more. And so the majority of my week looked like meeting with young leaders, spending a couple hours with them, studying the scriptures, studying how to be a worship leader better, and training up, you know, six campuses of worship leaders. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really formative for me. And I think it also, it was the first time I really ever felt fully understood.
Right.
In my gift set. And, you know, there's something weird about a worship leader who wants to do more than just singing, who wants to teach and wants to, you know, those kinds of things.
But, and I think it's important for that to be drawn out, because I know several different churches that I think have done that well, and that they found a guy that was either had speaking gifts, and, you know, I can think of one in particular that's now in Wheaton, you know, who's a pastor of a really good sized church. And I'm sure he's killing it, because that was developed in him, seen in him. We had him in three different positions before that happened. And just the growth that you see there and that you encourage and celebrate is important. Another example would be a person who's gifted creatively, musically, even visual graphics, everything. I can think of a guy who was very gifted in those areas, but at the same time, he was detail oriented, which I know sounds crazy.
Such a unique person.
It is an extremely unique person. Yeah. And so, you know, it was very quickly, he was brought in and up into more of a senior level role, because he had the chops to be respected by the creative community and by all the worship leaders, but at the same time, he was detail oriented enough to make sure that everything was well planned out, that we were doing things decently and in order to get things done the way that we needed to get them done across multiple campuses.
Yeah,
it seems to me that a common theme between what both y'all are saying is that sort of drawing out of, in this case, a worship leader comes from above.
Yeah,
you have to have the senior leadership, whether it's eldership or senior pastor, whoever's their overseer, they have to be looking for the gifts to be developed.
Yeah.
I would say that I would encourage anyone, whether they're a worship leader or a small groups guy or whatever they are, if you have passions that are outside of your responsibilities, crush your responsibilities, kill those responsibilities, and then look for ways that you can live that out. Volunteer in that other area, put yourself in a position where it's going to feed you, it's going to give you energy, but hopefully it's also going to be noticed and that you can grow into a different role.
And I would just say to pray through, like, you don't want to be the one to raise yourself up into a role necessarily. You know, you want to let God do that. And part of that comes from other people recognizing that in you. So for me, over the last, you know, few years, I started to feel a little bit more of a leading to teach more. And I haven't asked for that anywhere, but those doors have been opening. And so then also just having someone who encourages you to walk through the doors when they open, you know what I mean? And even gives you those opportunities, you know, that's huge. I think having the opportunity to begin to exercise those things, not coming from your hand, right? Not being something that you're forcing to happen, right, but letting God be the one to raise you up is also huge, I think.
This last question, it may be the most important, profound question.
I think it is.
That we have ever asked. Does shopping at Whole Foods wearing skinny jeans and deep V-necks, does that make worship leaders better at their jobs?
I mean, do those qualify as like spiritual gifts?
Yeah. Well, I'm not wearing skinny jeans, so maybe, you know.
You're not wearing a deep V-neck either.
I can't pull it off. I'm not, yeah.
But you do have tattoos.
I do have a tattoo.
A tattoo.
One singular tattoo.
So you're growing. There's lots of room for spiritual
but
development.
We do shop at Whole Foods. Mainly, I think a long life helps, you know, to be a great worship
What
leader.
About scarves? Scarves a spiritual aspect?
Oh, yeah. Your summer scarf.
No summer scarf. But
you live in Austin. You would die if you wore a scarf.
Oh, my gosh. It's like,
you'd probably die without one.
I do own a scarf.
Do you wear it for fashion or for function?
Yes. No, I mean, I wear it in wintertime, you know.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, we sort of answered that question. You did an effective job of ducking it and laughing instead of actually answering the question. Well, Steve, it has been great to have you on, and I hope this conversation has been helpful to listeners. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for contacting us and carving out the time, and I know you're headed off to do some other things in a few minutes, but we appreciate it greatly.
Yeah, man. It's been great. Thanks for having me on.
Good deal.
All right. Well, that was this episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. If you would be so kind, if you find anything useful in anything we have said, would you jump on iTunes, leave us a rating and review? What that does is it allows other people to find the podcast, because if you do that, iTunes is nice enough to make us easier to find. So you help us by doing those things. So listeners, if you'd be so kind, we'd appreciate it. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time. Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. To learn more about how you can train leaders in your church, visit ministrygrid.com/howitworks and watch a short demo video. For participating, you will get a free 30-day trial for your entire church. Again, that's ministrygrid.com/howitworks.